Welcome, pilgrims and peregrinos, to the El Camino de Santiago Pilgrims Podcast, where we talk about planning, preparation, and packing, as well as tips, tricks, and hacks to make your journey a lot more enjoyable. I'm your host, Andrew Baker, from Austin, Texas, and our guest is Maria Engel from San Diego, California. How's the weather out there?
It is actually pretty chilly for us these days, believe it or not.
Well, I always wish I was in San Diego. I spent a couple of years in my early 20s there. So, Maria, let's just cut to the chase. Imagine we're running into each other in the plaza in front of the cathedral in Santiago de Compostela. And we do the normal thing that pilgrims always do. And it's the, hey, can you take a picture of me in front of the cathedral? And so we exchange photos. And then we sit down and I ask you, so how did you end up here? What made you want to go on Camino?
That is always my favorite question, and it always changes throughout the whole time. But mine was a little different. My whole family, I'm a sibling of four, and my whole family had done it. My parents had both done it, and my older sister, my younger sister did it when she was 17. And they all had an amazing time and told me that I needed to do it someday. And I didn't want to feel left out because every time we would have a family gathering, they would always talk about it. So I knew that one day I would have to do it, but it was never something that I really wanted to do, which is surprising, but I wasn't into hiking. And I really did not sleeping in beds that weren't mine. So it wasn't something that I thought I would ever do, but in order to be included in the family conversations, I thought that one day I'd have to do it. And I got to a really low point my senior year of college. I broke up with my boyfriend and I was sad, and I figured, you know, why not suffer a little bit more? So I decided that I would do the Camino.
So that's interesting. Yeah. You're the first pilgrim I've ever talked to that this is a shared family experience. Can you elaborate a little bit about that, how your family came to the Camino?
Of course. So we moved to Spain when we were younger. My mom wanted us to learn a new language and a culture that was different from the American culture. So she moved us to Spain, and my dad is religious. He's Catholic, so it was something that he was interested in, but then he ended up chickening out a little bit because we also lived there with my cousins, and my uncle was like, you really need to train for this before you go. And so my dad got worried, and my mom told him, like, no, you can do this with no training. And he still didn't believe it, so she just went one day. She packed her bag and she went, because she's a minimalist. She does not like material goods. So she went with a small backpack and had the most amazing time and told him he absolutely needed to do it. And she's not religious at all. So for her, it was more of proving to him that he could do it without any training. But then she knew that he also would really enjoy it because of the Christian part of it. So then he decided to. So this was way back in 2007, 2008 when we lived there. And then when we came back, they encouraged my older sister to go after a rough breakup.
So just from my experience, it is funny how breakups seems to be the catalyst that sends so many pilgrims on Camino. Exactly. But it is remarkable. Do you recall how they heard of it? Or is it just something that when they were in Spain, you can't avoid hearing of the Camino?
Yeah, that's interesting because not many Spaniards do the full Camino. A lot of them through like school groups or church groups will go and do the last week or the last 10 days. Remember seeing them at the end from Sarria to Santiago. Mm-hmm. They'll do like the last 100 kilometers. So not everyone talks about it there. But I think my dad might have heard about it probably back in the United States because he's Catholic. I'm really not sure. I'm not sure where they heard about it. I, growing up in school, we always learned about it in religion class. So that was one thing, but I don't know. I will have to ask them. That's a good question.
And so you walked the Camino Francés, correct?
Yes. Yes, we all did.
So I want to go back. You're a senior in college.
Yes.
You arrive in this tiny Basque town of Saint-Jean-Pierre-de-Port. What are you thinking to yourself? You showed up alone, correct?
I did. Yes.
So you show up. I'm assuming you slept in a jeet or a geet in Saint-Jean. It's basically the French albergue, I'm told. But that first night, what's going through your mind, through your heart? What are you feeling? What kind of fears, joys? Tell me what was flowing through you.
Wow. That was an interesting night. There were a lot of emotions. I do remember I started from Valencia. I went to go stay with some family friends right beforehand and left some of my things there and then got on a train to Madrid and then another train to Pamplona. And so from the train from Madrid to Pamplona, I already saw some pilgrims with their backpacks. And so I'm pretty adventurous, but I kind of do get nervous if I don't know where I'm going. So I kind of followed them after the train in Madrid to Pamplona because I had no idea where the bus stop was. So I was stalking them a little bit, and then I was a little too close behind them, and I heard them talking, and then I just started joining in, which felt very awkward at first, but everyone is so nervous and excited to meet new people that they were very nice. And so we had lunch in Pamplona beforehand. So I already had friends going into St. John because we took the bus together later that evening. So we found an albergue together, and we're all one girl. She just came straight from the United States, and she was already starting to go through her backpack to ship stuff home before the first day. It was so funny. So we were in the albergue. I was very nervous because the next day I knew was going to be the hardest physically, I think because of the mountain and going up it. But, and I hadn't trained at all. And I was, since I was so sad from the breakup, I hadn't really worked out like I usually do. So I wasn't sure how that was going to go. So there were a lot of emotions. I was very excited. I was proud of myself that I made it there. I felt happy that I had already met a couple people. So it was a lot. It was hard to go to bed just knowing what was to come. But I just remember, laughing at her for already going through her backpack. She was already handing me things like, do you need any ibuprofen? And I didn't even think about bringing that. And I was like, that'd be great. She gave me some hydration, like water capsules, which was nice. And that like saved me the next day. So there was a lot going on that night. And I went to go have some crepes. And it was just, it was very fulfilling, I would say. Just experiencing all of that.
The first night before embarking on the Camino was something for me that was completely restless. I mm-hmm. will never forget getting zero sleep on the flights from Austin to London and then to Bayonne. I was just completely restless. And then when I got there, I couldn't sleep at all, even though I was, 40 hours without sleep at that point. So you mentioned your friend, this other American, was already shipping stuff back. Let's talk a little bit about your gear and your preparation and what you brought with you. Was there anything you wish you could have sent home that first day?
That's interesting because I was in Valencia before. So I had already packed a suitcase along with my backpack of things that I would leave there. And I remember they tell you that you don't want your backpack to be more than 10% of your weight. And I weighed it that night. And I think I was really thin at that point because just being so sad that it was a lot heavier than 10%. And so I called my older sister and I was like, I really need your help going through my stuff and trying to decide what to leave back. So I had already, even though, because when you go, I think you had messaged me also before the Camino asking what you would need, if you'd need a rain jacket or what. And it's nerve wracking because you're going and you want to have everything, but at the same time, you don't want to carry too much,
Yeah.
So I had a big conversation with her and we went through every single thing in my backpack and even my pills or like ibuprofen or vitamin supplements. Everything. I just put them in a little plastic baggie and I brought maybe two or three pairs of socks, very minimal clothing and I didn't have any luxury items. You know how everyone has their like luxury item that they have? I don't think I had one of them. But my dad let me use a big jacket. So I used that as a pillow and a jacket if I was cold or something to sleep with and like hold on to. But very few things. I was surprised.
So Maria mentioned something. Before I went on Camino my first time in the summer of 2019, I noticed one of her postings where she had just wrapped up her Camino in one of the American Pilgrims of the Camino de Santiago Facebook groups. And I ended up reaching out for her for a little bit of insight. And she just mentioned. So you mentioned one thing that's pretty common. Try not to carry more than 10% of your body weight.
Yeah.
And you also mentioned that at the time you're a little bit smaller. You're a little thinner. Mm-hmm. Were there things that you noticed maybe other pilgrims had that you perhaps had to sacrifice, considering you didn't want to carry more weight than 10% of your body weight?
Oh, I like that question. I ended up being very happy with what I had, even though there were some things that people had that I didn't. Everyone is always sharing. So I never felt like I was missing out on anything or that I needed something. And you could always buy stuff on the way also. So I didn't ever feel like I was missing out. Yeah.
So this first day, you're climbing over the Pyrenees. You're climbing through the Napoleon Pass and the footsteps of Charlemagne past the place where Roland fell in the Pyrenees. What was your moment of realization like, wow, this is really happening? What was it when you arrived in Saint-Jean? Was it that first day? Was it a few days into it? Because I felt like everyone has this one moment where it really hits them. And oh, yeah. Yes, you may have that, you know, like I'm here, but there's a moment where almost spiritually you have to surrender to the Camino.
Mm-hmm. That is so true. I remember the first morning, as you said, it's very hard to sleep the night before you start. And so as soon as it was acceptable to wake up, I woke up, got my things, and went to a little bakery nearby to get some breakfast. And I walked, there's this little bridge that you go over before you leave the town. And I think I just started crying, but a happy cry. And I never really cry. It's hard for me to cry. And I feel usually embarrassed or vulnerable when I cry, but it was such a good cry. And just knowing that I was there and I was doing this was kind of a magical feeling. I don't really think I could describe it.
So you're walking along. One of the things for me, it ended up happening very early. I started having issues with my knees. My body started breaking down mm-hmm. on the descent down to Roncesvalles. What were some of the ailments your body suffered? When and what parts of your body?
Oh, my goodness. See, that's the thing we never remember. During the Camino, that's probably the hardest part is physical pain. But when you look back on the Camino and when you want to do it again, you never think about that. So I do like that question. I was in so much pain. I remember that night when we arrived into Roncesvalles, I could not walk upstairs. My knees were also in so much pain. And someone, I think my sister, had given me a knee brace. So I started wearing the knee brace from day one, even though I didn't have any problems. And I'd always like switch it from knee to knee. And everyone offered me some kind of cream. This one guy from, I think, Uruguay or somewhere, he had this, I think it's called a magic pen, and you just rubbed it on your knee. Everyone offered what they had, which was so cool. And I don't know why I was the only one that was like in extreme pain, and I've never had problems with my joints. But that day did wreck me. And maybe it was because my backpack was a little too heavy or because I hadn't been working out in a while. But that first day, I think the descent was the hardest because you look forward to it all day because going up is so hard and exhausting. And you're looking forward to going down. But then once you do, it's such a steep downhill that it's more of a workout than going up. So yes, I do remember that. I think that and the blisters was probably the worst during the Camino, my knees and my blisters.
So of all the solutions to relieve some of the knee pain, what ended up being the best plan or best way to relieve yourself?
Mm-hmm. I think it was very important at the end of the day or during stops to stretch and put my legs up. So at the end of the day, when we'd be at the bar or at the restaurant having dinner, I would try to rest it on a chair, unless we were eating, because I didn't want to be rude. But, and especially in bed, like if I was laying in bed just for at least 10 minutes before bed, just having them rest up against the wall so they could drain, that ended up helping me a lot. Stretching, I noticed that the pain shifted. So it started in my knees. It went to my ankles, then it went to my hips. Kind of always seemed like it was somewhere else. And it never really goes away. There was never a day on the Camino where I was completely painless, but you end up getting used to it in a way, if that makes sense.
And obviously, blisters are something that I feel the vast majority of pilgrims are going to encounter in some way or another. Mm-hmm. How did you combat blisters? I mean, what was your plan of treatment?
So my mom told me that it was very important to thread them. And so she gave me a sewing kit and I had a needle with thread and you were just supposed to leave the thread in there so that it could keep some holes or some like open, some leakage, I guess. You wanted it to completely drain.
Yeah.
Because once they drained, then they would heal faster. So she told me that, and that really helped. They have so many different things. They have this patch. I don't remember what it's called that you can
put over your blisters.
Yes, the Compeed. Exactly. Oh my goodness. That was like, everyone was talking about that. So I ended up getting that. But that, I really wasn't the biggest fan of that because I would have some big blisters on the back of my foot and the Compeed would kind of just become your skin. And then in the shower, it would kind of peel off a little bit. And so you would try to take it off and it'd rip off some of your skin too. So I wasn't the biggest fan of Compeed, but it did help for some areas. Also moleskin. Moleskin helped for the toes, just kind of having it as a buffer between your socks or your foot and your shoe, I guess.
So for Americans out there, Compeed is very similar to a moleskin. I think it has a little stronger adhesive and it has some padding.
Yeah.
And for Europeans and those in the rest of the world, moleskin is the American version of Compeed. It's one of those things you just kind of have to find and figure out what works better for you.
Yeah. Oh, I remember one more thing. They told me to Vaseline your foot or your feet going. And if you had sweaty feet during the day, to switch out your socks, because dry socks were important also.
Very valuable information, something that I practice early on in the Camino and still on long walks today. I still do. You got to keep those socks dry and those feet. I always liked Vaseline, but Vaseline was gold for me. I had chafing issues, so I was using Vaseline everywhere. But speaking of socks, it's one of the probably the most valuable pieces of clothing outside of your shoes and your backpack. What did you have a sock that you preferred?
Oh yes. I ended up wearing only one pair of socks the entire time, which sounds absolutely disgusting, but I did wash them every night for the most part, but they were the smart wool, the very thin smart wool, not like the thick padded ones.
And let me ask you this. What time of year did you walk?
I walked from the beginning of June. I think I started May 31st. So the last day of May until July 1st. So early summer.
Okay. I feel like that's one of the things a lot of pilgrims, we may, what's the best way to put it? We may discount the most the time of year that we walk, because it really completely shifts the kind of gear you may bring. Did you bring any heavy clothing, even though you were in late May throughout June?
Yeah. So I did bring my dad's jacket, the one I was saying before that I'd use as a pillow. And sometimes it would get so cold. I remember one night we walked through the night. There's there's one stretch of the Camino where there is nothing for 17 kilometers through the meseta. Mm-hmm. So we decided to do that at night because one of my Camino friends had learned or heard that from his sister. His sister had done it and they walked that day at night. So we did the same thing and it was so beautiful. We each had a bottle of wine to walk with and our headlamps and we were under the stars, but it got so cold. And I remember I have never been more cold in my life, but once we got to the town early in the morning, there was not a bodega that was open. We had some hot chocolate and it was all better after that. So, but it did get cold.
Do you remember the towns that you were walking in between?
That is a good question. I do not know. I do have my book somewhere, but I don't remember at the moment. I might have to let you know at another time.
So that's a fairly interesting thing, because I don't think I've talked to a pilgrim that has walked through the night on the Camino, which is, I mean, when you get to Santiago de Compostela, it's literally St. James under a field of stars, and there you were in the meseta, mm-hmm. walking under a field of stars. How is that different than walking? Obviously, you're not in the daytime in the light, and you're colder, but just for you emotionally and maybe spiritually, how is that different?
It was cool because of the group that I was with. We were all, it definitely wouldn't have been my idea, but we just put up some hammocks. Everyone in my Camino family had a hammock. So we hammocked in the trees that evening and tried to get a nap in. And then we headed out probably at 11 p.m. and we stopped at a bar for a shot before going. Which I was never a big drinker on the Camino, but a lot of people are, they like to have fun. So that night, we got a shot. We went and they had their wine bottles and we talked, and it was very interesting because it was a little scary because you couldn't see anything. But then at the same time, it was so beautiful because you could see all the stars. And you heard a lot of different noises that you wouldn't usually pay attention to because I guess your senses are heightened since you can't really see that well. So it could be creepy at times, but we were never scared. We were scared because of the scenery, but Spain, especially where you're walking, isn't dangerous. You know, like it's not. We're not by Barcelona. We're not by any of those towns. People still pickpocket and stuff, but they're never in dangerous areas. So it wasn't scary in that sense. But I think just seeing the sunrise and being there with no one was, I don't know a word to describe it. Like it was very, I don't know. I don't even know what I would say. I enjoyed it. And I liked being with people. I would never do it alone. So it made it cool because of the people I was with. But I don't think I would have enjoyed it by myself because it was very quiet. And I enjoyed the aspect of getting to know people and just always having someone either before you or behind you to be able to go up to or know that they're going to be there in case you get hurt or need some kind of help, either emotionally or physically.
So you brought up aspects of safety on the Camino. I'm sure there's a lot of young women out there who have thought, maybe I'll walk the Camino someday, but they worry about the safety aspect of walking alone in a country they're unfamiliar with, and maybe they don't speak the language. Mm-hmm. What would you say to those potential pilgrims out there with those same concerns?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely valid to have those concerns. And I know that parents are also worried sometimes about their children, but I think just trust the process and know that there are so many other people on the Camino, people that become your Camino dad, your Camino mom. And everyone is always looking out for each other. So I never once felt unsafe. And if there was a situation where I couldn't possibly feel unsafe, there was always someone around that was there to comfort or just be there in case something happened. But really, there are so many people. I'm not sure. It's probably different now with COVID and maybe not being so lively. But yeah, there's just always people there looking out for you. It's such a great sense of community.
So aside from sticking around other pilgrims, were there any other precautions that you took, maybe regarding your belongings, your possessions, that you took while you're on Camino, just to ensure your belongings stayed safe or your gear stayed safe?
Yes. Yeah, so I do remember the first couple nights, Roncesvalles, we stayed at the albergue. There, I think, are probably 400 beds or something. I don't remember the exact number, but there are so many. And they do have lockers for a reason. And I usually tend to like to trust the world because that's how my mom is. But they do highly encourage you to lock up your stuff. And when they do, it's for a reason. And so you should do that or sleep with your stuff. Sometimes I would sleep with I always slept with my passport and my wallet on me because I had one of those like necklace things. I'm not sure what they're called, but I'd always keep that in there and my phone and sleep with those on me. But if they had lockers, I would try to use them. Because those nights, I do remember a lot of people did get stolen from. And I think it's just because people know that all these pilgrims are new. And I don't think it's actual pilgrims that are stealing. I think it's people from the town that get into the albergue. And they know the situation. They know that these people are vulnerable or ready for the experience. But they're coming from all over the world. And they're learning to trust people. So that is a very vulnerable time. And I remember that. That was just such a bummer the next day. So many of my friends that I had met the day before waking up without their phone or without their money. So definitely at the beginning when there are those albergues that are so big, either sleep with your things or try to lock them up in a locker. Some people do have locks for their backpacks, but I didn't and I was fine.
So we've discussed some of the equipment that you brought with you, how to prepare that way. And you talked that you didn't really have a lot of time to prepare your body since you're coming from a breakup.
Yes.
What about your spirit and your soul? How did you prepare mentally and emotionally for the Camino? Because I feel like that's equally important when you're going to take on a medieval pilgrimage across Spain.
Oh, yeah. I think I was just at such a low point in my life that I could have done anything. I was just open to any experience because I had suffered so much already, just that heartbreak where nothing anyone says can make you feel better. And so I was open and I knew that it could only go up from there. I also, from what I had heard from my family, I knew that it would probably be such a great experience. So I had that already. And then I'm not sure. I tried to trust. I did try to get back into, I was brought up Catholic, but I always like fall away and will come back or sometimes it takes a little while. So I just tried to trust in the world, trust in God, that everything would be okay and that I could meet people who could become my family somewhere that's so far away from home and somewhere that I am nervous or it's just, I'm such a homebody. So I was I don't like being out of my element. So I think I just had to pray and accept that whatever was going to happen was going to happen.
So I've heard before, they say the first third of the Camino de Santiago, it tests your body. The Meseta, yeah. Sort of that middle area, it tests your mind. Mm-hmm. And then the last stretch, the last third through Galicia, it tests your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Which one of those three do you feel like was really put through the grinder, that something that really was pushed to the brink of maybe there was a point where you didn't know you could move forward or maybe you came to a breaking point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think probably through the meseta. And it was definitely through, I think, the spirit part, the third, because I had heard the same thing. And I think the third part was just such a great feeling. And it was never really that tough, maybe. I don't know how to explain it. But the mind part was the hardest for me. And going through the meseta, I remember there's just one day that I broke down. It was hot. I had a headache. I was dehydrated. I was so exhausted because we always had a destination in mind where we wanted to get to. And we walked with younger guys. And so they were fast and they could walk forever. And so we always had somewhere we kind of had to get to. We didn't have to, but that was always our goal. So I was just exhausted. And this is at the point where your mind is getting tested. And I was always a very negative person. And I think that is the part that was the hardest and also that changed me the most for the long run. And I am so grateful for that because I tend to try to not focus on the negative so much anymore. And to also, for people, when you have problems with people, that's most of the time it's just not even worth it. You know, it's no one is intentionally trying to hurt someone. And if they are, it's because of pain that they've gone through or something. So that part during the Camino was the hardest for me. But it definitely helped me in the long run the most.
If you don't mind, was there a particular story or an instance that you wouldn't mind sharing?
There, actually, the first one that comes to mind is there's just this Camino magic that people will talk about. And I remember one day, my sister, so it was actually the day that you leave your rock at that mountain.
At the Cruz de Ferro.
Yes, exactly. And so I actually didn't know that you're supposed to bring a rock from home. So the first day of my Camino, I ended up picking up a rock and carrying it. And you carry it in your backpack and it's supposed to symbolize the baggage that you bring with you and that day you decide to give up and leave behind. So I remember that day I had my Camino bestie that we met the first day and stayed together ever since. And so we always had the best Camino talks and we talked for so many days about what we were going to leave behind at the Cruz de Ferro. And so I wanted to leave behind negativity and gossiping because girls can be very gossipy. And I just wanted, I didn't like that because it does feel very toxic. So that was the day that I was like, you know what? I'm going to leave this behind. So I left it there and the first couple days, great. But then a couple days later, we were at that town with the river. And it was, I don't remember what it's called, but it's so beautiful. Obviously there's so many towns with rivers, but this is one of the big ones at the end. I wish I remember. They all just blend together in my mind. But I was getting so frustrated with one of the guys in my Camino family because he's younger and one of those teenage boys that just likes to mess around. And I was getting so upset with him. It was dinner. We were all having a communal dinner together and I just couldn't handle it anymore. So I left for a walk and I called my sister and we're talking on WhatsApp because that's what I would use to talk with my family and friends because I was in Spain. And so I'm talking with her on the phone and the conversation goes really smoothly. There's no interruption in connection. And then I'm finally like, okay, I need to vent about this guy in the Camino. And so I start telling her and gossiping and just venting about the guy in my Camino family that I'm just so frustrated with. And my connection starts, I start losing connection. It's like beep, 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 beep. I'm like, what the heck? And so then I stop and it comes back. And she's like, Maria, I can't really hear you. And so I try again and it starts beeping again. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I start getting really frustrated. And this happens like 7 times. And finally, I'm like, you know what, Elena, I'm just going to tell you another time. And after that, the connection, I didn't even move. The connection was perfect after that. And so it reminded me, I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, this is a sign from the universe that wanted to keep me true to what I decided I was going to give up. And ever since then, no problem with the connection with my sister. And we had a good conversation. And after that, I just let go of what I was so focused on, the little negative petty things And I just felt so light after that. Once I realized that it just wasn't worth it and that I didn't need to talk about it, it was just that little symbol from the universe of like, we're not going to connect this phone call for you to gossip or be in this negative space of mind. That's all I really needed. And after that, it was such a cool feeling because I'd remember that. And there were so many little things like that of just little Camino magic that would hold you accountable that I loved.
It's kind of like that line from The Alchemist, another pilgrim, Paulo Coelho said it. When you truly want something, all the universe conspires to help you find that thing. And here you were trying to let go of your negativity.
Exactly.
your cell phone provider said, nah. So
true.
Let me ask you about some of the locations that you walked through and some of the places that you know stood out to you, and maybe they still stay with you. What were some of the towns that will forever be in your heart that you walked through on the Camino?
I remember my favorite town was Las Herrerías. That was right before you walked up to Ocebreiro, which is one of the hills near the end. And I just remember we're in the valley. It had rained, and so the grass is just twinkling with little droplets, and there were cows just grazing, and we were sitting at a bar, and they're serving pizza, and we're having a glass of wine. It was just so peaceful. And it was towards the end of the Camino, and so you had already done so much. And everyone that you would see was a familiar face for the most part. It was just such a tranquil time. That was one of my favorite towns. I also remember one towards the beginning. Oh my goodness, these names are just never going to come to me. But it was also, you know what? I'm not even going to say a town with a river, because now that I'm realizing it, so many towns were by rivers. But it was shortly after Pamplona. The bigger cities were always fun because you could either get an Airbnb or you could stay in one of the albergues, and you could stay for a couple days. That's what we would end up doing, just so we could see more of the town. So those were always fun. And you could have reunions, and it was kind of a time that you would see people that had gone far ahead or people that were behind you if you stayed for more than one night. So I did like that too. I can't remember the name. I just remember that it was like a big sleepover, and all my Camino friends were there, and it was so many bunk beds in one room, and all the bunk beds were connected. So that was just so much fun. But of course, I don't remember the name. I think if you talked with Jera, she would be so much better at remembering names. But for me, it was just all one big city in my head. I can never get them right, because they're all amazing.
So let me ask you this. Was there a favorite albergue you had that you would absolutely insist that younger Maria or the other, you know, Maria from LA just has to stop at when she's walking the Camino?
100%. Yes. There's this one that I remember we went as a family to meet my dad when he did it. And it's a family owned albergue right after the town. Okay, I need to go get my book because this is going to bother me. But I need to remember this. It is, let's see.
This is a normal thing that happens to a lot of pilgrims, for those of you who are listening. Pilgrims, we have such fond memories with each of these towns where you have so many memories, but that name is just, especially when you're not from the country, it's just right on the tip of your tongue, and it's so difficult to remember it exactly, and you have to have that one Camino family member that is there for you to say, it was Nahana, exactly. Or it was Belorado. Yes. And so
Belorado, that also sounds like it rings a bell. Oh, okay. My sister responded because I knew they'd probably be faster than me finding my book. She said Boadilla. So it's called Boadilla del Camino.
Okay.
Where
was that?
I think it might have been a couple days after Pamplona. So towards the beginning. I can't remember the exact towns, but so it's Boadilla del Camino. And there's this family that owns it, and they have a pool, actually, which is one of the main attractions. But they are just the sweetest family. We've kept in touch with them since my mom did the Camino. She made really good friends with the owner, and they have really good service and food and just this beautiful backyard where the Camino pilgrims would hang out and either suntan or read their books or be in the pool. And I just really liked the family vibe that they had. And everyone is just so loving and caring there and always excited to meet new people. So I think that was really cool because my whole family had stopped there. So it was cool being part of that history, I guess, or just feeling like I was following in their footsteps. And Eduardo is the owner, or the son of the owner.
So you mentioned your favorite towns, your favorite albergues. Was there a bar or restaurant where you had a memorable meal or something serendipitous happened there?
Oh, the Spanish food. I was probably, my friend and I were the only ones on the Camino that we know of that gained weight. Usually people go and they lose weight. So we basically did the taste of Spain. They had the best food, tortilla de patata, and all the bocadillos, the bread. Oh my goodness, the coffees in the morning, just everything. So I don't know about a specific one because we probably stopped at one in each town. And you know, there's like a town every 2 to 5 miles. So we probably hit almost a lot. Well, I don't know how many, but a lot of bars. So there was not a favorite that I can think of right now, but all the sangria and each place would have their specialty. So that was fun.
So let me wrap this around because I want to ask you a little bit more about some of your equipment before we get into the more of the spiritual things that kind of surround the ethos of the Camino. I really want to ask you this question. You said that you're a minimalist and you try to be carry as little gear as possible. What was something, if you had to walk again, that you would take with you?
I, at the time, never thought there was something that I would add on. But now thinking back, I would really bring some kind of special journal or a journal that I would make special because my best friend from the Camino, that's what she had. And so she has so many memories because obviously you like to think that you're going to remember everything, but with time, memory, especially mine, just fades. And it makes me so sad. And I have all these pictures, which is amazing, but I wish that I could have some writing with specific town names or albergue names or people that I had met that I could hold on to because I know that my memory is not always going to be so sharp. So that is something I would definitely bring, a really cool journal, not just one that I mean, maybe if I bought it on the Camino, but for some reason, notebooks are very expensive in Spain. I'm not sure why, but that would be something. I think a good notebook and some colorful pens. And I never really liked to take time to write, but my friend did. And now she has so many cool things to look back on and she'll share them with me once in a while. But I think that would be something that I would take next time.
So you heard it from Maria. If she could do it all over again, she'd bring a journal. But make sure you don't buy a Spanish journal. You buy one from your own country with colored pens.
Exactly. And one other thing I had to mention, because I don't want to forget this. I had packed clothes that I thought would be great for the Camino, but there were these one pants that I wore that bothered me so much with my backpack. So always try on. I suggest trying on your clothes with your backpack filled and walking a couple miles because you never know until you're there and you've walked so many miles. And when you're just like, oh my goodness, this is really just like digging into my hip or something. So definitely try to not only train in your boots, because that's important, but also in the clothes that you plan on wearing.
So back to the ethos of the Camino, I feel like everyone who walks, you're taught so many lessons. Sometimes it's when you're alone in the meseta walking past Ontanas, or maybe it's one of those Camino angels that you always hear about that gives you that tiny little piece of advice that just means so much to you. Tell me about some of the lessons you've learned, or maybe one of those special moments that you had a revelation while walking the Camino.
Yes. Well, I learned a lot more than I would remember because it's just become a part of me now. But I do remember just realizing that there was this one girl that I really disliked with the whole breakup. And I got to a point on the Camino where I realized that she had never done anything intentionally to get at me or hurt my feelings. And that's when I realized that humans, we're all just trying to live our best life. And we don't intentionally try. I mean, people do if they're hurt, but we don't just actively go to try and ruin other people's life. And I think that was one big thing that I learned, that we're just all on the same journey and we're trying to do it in the best way possible for ourselves. And once you realize that, you just kind of see everyone else as yourself or in the same light. And you're just, you have empathy towards them after that. And I was always a negative person or just wanted to pick fights with whoever. And I don't know why, but I remember that day and just realizing that it's really not worth it. And we could lose someone at any point in our lives. And so as much as you can, we do get angry, and anger is a secondary emotion. So if you could try to figure out what's the underlying emotion you're feeling, whether it's sadness or hurt, I'm not sure, but try to deal with that instead of anger. And one thing that helped me deal with that is just taking some time, because when we are really upset, we tend to say things or do things that we don't mean. And that was one thing I learned on the Camino, is just reflect or just go and be by yourself for a little bit and try to realize what is actually bothering you and how you can come back and deal with it in a better way. Because we always end up regretting the things we say when we're mad, or the things we do when we're angry at someone. So just taking a step back, and whether it's praying or if you're not religious, just meditating, doing something that's not acting right away. That was one thing that I really enjoyed learning.
Well, one of the many beautiful things about the Way of St. James is time is something you're never in short supply of. You talk about the religious aspect of your family and also the emotional reasons you've walked. When you arrived in Santiago de Compostela, what was your reason for walking when you got to the pilgrim's office?
I never really thought about that. Honestly, I think to just learn a new side of myself, because I had always felt like I was put into some category, because I'm one of four children. I'm the second. So I'm one of the middle children. And I always felt like the negative, just selfish one. And so whenever I'd be with my family, I kind of feel like I'm put into that. And I never wanted to be that, but I always felt like I was put in that category. And so I'd act that way. And so I think on the Camino, it was really just a time where I could learn or be who I wanted to be and learn a new side of myself that then I could come back and share, because I had done retreats in the past, and retreats are great and you feel refreshed after, but they're only like 1 to 3 days. And so there's not much time that you can actually change. But the Camino is a whole month of just walking and therapy. It's just basically I was going to say free therapy, but it's not entirely free. So not free therapy, but you just meet so many people that end up being better than therapists. I mean, therapists are also great, but these people just connect with you on a deeper level. And you just learn a new side of yourself, and one that most people are happier to be in the end. I think it helps you find your true self that you really enjoy or that you've always been craving.
So I always like to end with this, unless you have other stories, which I, again, the curse of the pilgrim is you, we really can't stop and shut up about the Camino when we get talking exactly. about it. But I do want to ask you, I feel like every pilgrim, part of their experience, they always have one of those nights where the wine is flowing and maybe you stay up past the 10 o'clock albergue cutoff time, and the songs from your home countries are they're shared. Did you have a night like that?
Oh my goodness. We had so many nights like that. And it was always so amazing for me because I only a few times would drink that much. So for the most part, I was just there to enjoy it, but I didn't get the hangover because I wouldn't actually drink as much as everyone else. So I would be there enjoying it, knowing that I'd be fine the next day. But everyone else was a lot of drinks in, and two of my friends had brought the Camino friends, not people that I'd gone with, but they brought ukuleles or guitar lelies. And so they would play and just either make up songs or play songs that they knew. And some albergues had instruments and people would get on them, whether it was piano or guitar, and just start singing, and everyone would sing together. And those were some of my favorite times. And I would record them on my phone, just having that when I'm sad or whatever to go and listen back on is my favorite, because people with a couple drinks in them, they get rowdy but in a good way, and they'll sing their hearts out, and it's just so heartwarming. And then the next day, I don't understand how, but people would be up at 5 a.m. and out walking. But my friends and I, we'd always be the ones kicked out of the albergue at 8 a.m. We would never set our alarms to get up early, but we'd get kicked out by the cleaning ladies or the volunteers at the hostel because you're supposed to be out by a certain time. So we just went with the flow. We didn't really want to have a schedule of needing to wake up for sunrise or this, and just whether it was a night that it was raining and we went in early, or we sat outside and drank and played music or shared our stories or laughed. This is embarrassing to admit, but I peed my pants laughing multiple times on the Camino. And I'm not, it's embarrassing, but it is just so much fun. I think just the smiling itself and the laughing is therapy. You don't even, like, the rest obviously is great, but that brings the most happiness that I'll cherish forever.
So Maria, you had to give me a song that's on your Camino soundtrack.
Oh my goodness. That's a good question, because everyone has their Camino playlist. The song that I heard in a bar for the first time on the Camino was someone you loved, that ended up being super popular, and people are probably very annoyed with it by now, because it was on the radio for so long. But Someone You Loved by Louis Capaldi played one morning when we were at breakfast in this little bar, and that ended up being my Camino song.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Maria. It's been an absolute pleasure catching up with you and discussing the Camino de Santiago. As always, thank you again, and buen Camino.
Buen Camino, Andrew. I really appreciate it. It's always so much fun reminiscing on the Camino.
I'm going on during this time, I fear there's no one to save me. This all or nothing really got away, you're driving me crazy. I need somebody.